Well, I have to pray first because, you know, I may not act nervous, but always am. And that sort of gives me the chill. So let's pray, okay? Dear Heavenly Father, I am very so honored to be here. If it was one person or 500 people, the deal is getting to share something about your wisdom with somebody else. You know, Lord, I think often about how many Bible studies we go to, how many books we read, how many sermons we've heard, how many things like this we go to. And I hope that we don't hoard. You know, we need to give it away. So that's why it doesn't matter if it's one or 500 or you write a book that goes to millions. Lord, just giving you away is such a blessing. And that's what I hope to do tonight, even though your name is not going to be spoken a whole lot. Every one of these tools and the knowledge you have given me, I know has all come from you. So this all has your name on it. Father, thank you. Would you bless every mama here? List whatever the individual details are of what they're dealing with or what they might deal with or what they have dealt with. Lord, would you just give them lots of patience and wisdom and understanding and know that it's a process. It's all a process. We don't just fix them with one little timeout or if they make mama break down and cry. There's not one thing that's going to fix. It all needs to come together and it all works together. Lord, thank you. And would you give me much wisdom and skill to move quickly through these notes so we're not here a long, long time. Father, thanks. In your holy name, amen. Gail said to me, tell him how long you've been here. 1996 to now, so I guess that's 24 years, right? 24, okay. So the first Sunday we came to this church was when that was the first Sunday at this church. They had been meeting the Green something. Where was that, Gail?
River Green.
And anyway, they moved here. We were thinking about changing churches from where we used to go. And my husband's an architect. So he said, hey, let's go. This is the wrong reason. Hey, let's go up there and see that new building. So anyway, but he's a strong believer, but he also is quite the architect. In fact, we're sitting in one of his designs right now. My husband did the chapel and this. And some other things, but this is my first time to speak in here, so it's kind of neat knowing that his hand is on it, and I can see his hand and his design in here. So, okay, we're going to talk about kids and anxiety, but more probably about the mamas, because you're the ones that have to deal with it. If the kids knew what to do about it, with it, we wouldn't need to talk like this. So, and they don't. They're just little, and they don't even know what's going on. They can't tell you sometimes. So Gail mentioned, I love that she kind of gave me some guidelines. She said, and it sounded like she had talked to some of the moms that wanted to hear about this topic. And she said, well, they want to know how to recognize it, how to respond to it. And that I would throw the word tools into that. Then what tools can you use to help at home? And when do we moms know that we need to go get help? And I thought, well, those are awesome questions. So we'll talk about those. I do want to say this. You know, a child may present or be acting anxious, but that does not necessarily mean they have an anxiety disorder. That may be, I get anxious once in a while, but I don't actually have a diagnosis of anxiety. And then others can have a diagnosis. It can be genetic, you know, hereditary, but not necessarily. Or it can present later in life or bang you up for a while and then leave. I mean, it's just a mystery. And every case is unique. Every case is unique. Now, let's define anxiety. Some people have a misunderstanding about it. Anxiety is a feeling of distress or uneasiness of the mind caused by true fear, imagined irrational fear. That's a big one with kids. Disappointment or imagined stresses or things that they can't even identify. I mean, they're not going to come to you and say, oh, I'm feeling anxious. Well, they might say that, but they're not sure what all that means. It's not a word a little kid would ever use, not even the word nervous. They will use scared. You know, we have some typical words from them. But I want to let you know that anxiety also, I just mentioned an uneasiness of the mind. It also can hit. I have had a little bit of anxiety once in a while, and mine's strictly physical. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not all stressed out. It's a physical reaction to some body changes, hormone changes. In fact, when I retired is when it hit, like a year and a half ago, it hit me hard. And I thought, what? It should be just the opposite, shouldn't it? Well, the doctor explained to me, ended up with panic attacks about a month or 2 months later. It was on a Sunday. I was here at church and I was having trouble breathing like this. I thought, no, you're a counselor. You're not supposed to do that. Stop it. Don't let anybody know. And I finally realized I was having a panic attack. It'll be over in a minute. 8 hours later when it wasn't, you know, there's only so long you can do that. And I said to my husband, take me to the hospital. I'm losing it. And so he did, and they said, this is a giant panic attack. What's going on in your life? And I went, not as much as used to be. And, you know, I didn't understand this. And then he explained it's probably adrenaline. I'm saying this to you as adults. In fact, this is a little tidbit for you guys. I don't think children would present this way. And I couldn't figure out what in the world, and I couldn't calm myself down. The only way I could not panic as much in my mind, even though I still couldn't breathe good and my heart was racing, was to just write. So I wrote, stop it, stop it, stop, which wasn't helpful. Nothing helped it. The doctor gave me a half of an Ativan, which is a benzodiazepine. It's a chill pill. He gave me a half of one, and in about 20 minutes, I was fine. He said, now, that's only going to work a few hours. That's going to come right back. So that's, well, you need to get to your doctor and find out. He said, my guess is it's adrenaline. But I thought, what's this? I mean, I know what adrenaline is, but why now? And so my doctor explained it to me. He said, when you have done what I've done for the last 21 years in my counseling office, and I owned the business, so it was a pretty big go, go, go every day. And when you step aside, even though I was pretty busy, but he said, your brain is reading that very differently, and you're dumping the same amount of adrenaline you were dumping all those years because your brain got used to it, but it's not being absorbed. And it just made you, made the heart rate go up and all that business. So he knew what to do. In fact, he had been an Olympic diver, my doctor, for the U.S. Olympic team. And he said as soon as the Olympics were over, he had the very same thing because that's go, go, go. And when it was over and all that practice laid back, he still swam all the time, but the pressure wasn't there. The excitement, the pressure was had changed. And so that's how he knew what I had because he had experienced it. Okay. The kind of anxiety that you have where maybe you're running a few minutes late to something, that's not what I would call true anxiety. That's just a little moment of I wouldn't even put a word on it. It's just life. It's just life. Or that the kind you felt when you were in school and you had to stand up in front of the class and give a book report. That little nervousness, or if you had to do a piano recital, even if you shook, those are just normal physical reactions. Now, if you were sick at your stomach for 3 days before you gave the book report and you were vomiting on the day of the book report and you didn't sleep for 2 days after, now that could be an anxiety problem. So if it depends on how severe and how long it lasts, and we'll talk some more about symptoms. One of the big things, moms, is what are you role modeling for your child? And being that it can be genetic, and you're so used to how you feel and how you act. It just may be your norm, but maybe you're a bit of an anxious person and your child is reading you. I mean, they are really reading you. I've seen children even hold their arms in session. A lady that I had, I talk with my hands, a lot of people do. This lady had this style. She always had this hand right here, and she talked like this. I thought she had a nap problem or something. But then she wanted me to talk to her 3-year-old, and I didn't usually counsel kids till they were 4 and on up till age 100 or whatever. But her little girl, I have that little bitty counseling chair. It was so cute. And she sat down in the chair, and she crossed her little legs and did her arm like this, and she started talking to her. Oh my gosh, it was so cute. She did just like her mommy. They really do copy, even anxiety. They really do. I have a friend petrified of thunderstorms and lightning and thunder and the whole, she's my age. Her kids, because of her fear, and she sort of, her husband was one of those path of least resistance. If she's getting in the bed and pulling the covers over her head and she goes, David, come do this with me. I'm so scared. So David, the husband gets, well, here comes all the kids. Till those kids were 15, 16, they were jumping in the bed during thunderstorms. Nobody taught them not to be afraid. They just assumed it was bad because that's what they saw role model. So role modeling is very, very important. I want you to know that anxiety, this is an important sentence, anxiety untreated or not responded to well can get worse. In fact, you'd expect it to. Now, that's the kind of anxiety that needs treatment. We'll talk about that at the end. But treatment can be, let's say you have a child at home. We're going to get to the interesting ways anxiety can show up in small children. But if you don't respond, forget the word treatment, proper response. If it's like, stop that. That is not a proper response to anxiety. Or if you don't quit that, you're going to have to go to bed early. Well, wait, what's going on? And what if they are breaking their toys? Well, if that's not their norm, why are they doing that? It looks like they're just being bad. But are they? And there really is something underlying sometimes. I'll give you a great example in our family that happened recently. My daughter-in-law, Christy, is here, up here in the front. I asked her permission to do this. we're going to just admit that one of her kids is not perfect. No. Can you imagine? No, okay, but here's what's weird about this. His name is Reynolds. He's 5. My maiden name was Reynolds, so that's how he got stuck with that. And I love it. I just love that little name. Anyway, so Reynolds is like this kind of kid. I remember his first Christmas, maybe it was his second, when he tore the paper off his presents, he folded the paper and laid it down. Okay, what a strange little fella. And if the presents match, like he got 2 puzzles, the books go in this stack, and they're just, the puzzles are, oh boy, this is a very orderly child. And my dad was an engineer, and my son, his daddy's an engineer, so I think we might have another little engineer coming along. I don't know. But anyway, he's just so calm and polite, and yes, and you put him to bed, and he's in bed. I mean, and for me, of course, for Grammy, now she says he's not this perfect at home. At my house, he is scary perfect. So what I'm about to tell you was shocking. So I go to their house. He's going to go meet his kindergarten teacher. He's going to do, you know, online, but they got to go actually meet the teacher face-to-face. And I think 3 other children were going to be there. So they go to do that. I went to their house to keep the almost 2-year-old. And he's so excited, you know. I know he's got that new backpack, and he's got that lunchbox, which they're not going to need because, for a while they thought they were going to need them. So he's just super excited. I mean, he really was. And aren't kids excited? And plus, the way we build it up. Oh, you're going to meet your teacher. Now, the way we talk to them, and they drink in all the ways you act and everything you do. And the commercials on TV about back to school supplies. Everything pumps them up. Okay. So an hour and a half later, they come back in the door. He's crying, and her eyes are like this. I thought, what? And so I said, what? And he's sort of almost sobbing like that, that hard stuff. And she's not real happy with him. And it's very obvious. And that's so, you know, what? But I didn't ever dream he could have anything to do with going to meet this teacher. You know, maybe he stubbed a toe on the way in the door. I don't know. So I Wendell, what's the matter? And then he cries a little bit harder because he looks up at her like, uh-oh, something, uh-oh. Just to get him to talk to me, and I didn't mean to jump in and put on Grammy's counselor cape or the mother-in-law know-it-all or whatever you want to call it, but I did. And I got down low, you know, and I talked to him really. I said, Reynolds, what's wrong? What's the matter? But then I thought, wait, it's okay. There's something about the words, it's okay, that means it's okay. And I love hearing it if I'm out of whack. You know, I'm going to stay with you if I'm out. So it's just a natural with me, I guess, counseling so long. But I said, sweetie, it's okay. It's okay. And he calmed right then. But then he could talk. He couldn't calm before he something helped him get calm. And Christy said, you're not going to believe what he did. He got behind me and said, and then he flopped on the floor and rolled all around instead of meeting the teacher. I mean, oh, I'm sure that's not embarrassing for the mother. And then he wouldn't meet the other children. He wouldn't even look at them. He wouldn't talk. I mean, it's like, what? Who is this kid? And I thought what their conversation must have been like in the car. I didn't ask her, but it was probably, I mean, I'm just guessing. What are you too? Like, why did you do that? What's wrong with you? Just what's going on? But being this counselor thing, deal that I am, I thought that's not him. Something's going on. And so I said, Reynolds, what were you feeling? And he said, frustrated. His first word, his first answer. Now, what kind of a big word for a 5-year-old. And I wonder if he really knew frustrated, but I believe he did. He said, frustrated. And I tried to think of it a minute about frustrated. I wondered, was he frustrated before he flopped on the floor and rolled around, or was he frustrated at himself for how he acted and embarrassed himself? I didn't quite know where the frustrated went. I know what she felt like, but I wasn't sure where his was. And then later he said he was scared. And he did, and we talked a little bit separate. She was taking care of, so I took him over and we talked a little separate. And he was rolling around on the floor at that moment. I was talking to him, but he was chill. And he was just playing. And I think he, the best I could tell, he told me he was scared and he was frustrated. And then he said he was sad. And I realized the sad was that he thought he was going to get in trouble, thought he was going to get busted. And maybe he was going to, you know? Yeah. So, which would be the normal thing. So I had a few minutes, and that's where you go, I hope mother-in-law know it all here. And because I don't, mother-in-law doesn't know it all, I assure you, but I am a counselor. So I said, you know what I think happened? I think he got nervous and got scared, but didn't know what to do with it. So it's like diversion. He just kind of went cuckoo. Do we spank that? Well, we sure do want to, or if you spank or put him in timeout or whatever you do. But like, what really happened? Rather than treating the behavior, what happened? Let's figure it out. And so we talked about asking him, how do you feel? What are you thinking? What's going on? And that's really, really important with children. Some of them are too little to do that with. And I bet some of you have some that are too little. And even though he's five, there would be some cases where he'd be way too young for that, just way too young. I went too far in here. But the deal was just to recognize he's off. There's something going on. He's too little to tell you. So that's your signal to go, pause, time out. Hey, excuse me, and to the teacher, you know, hey, excuse me a second. And then go and say, what's going on? You know, and if they're going to just lose it and act like wild man, you say, well, we're going to have to leave then so you can come outside and talk to me. But maybe you can get them to calm down enough to come back to their senses a little bit. But he just got overwhelmed, completely overwhelmed, and didn't know what. And see, I thought it was interesting. He was nervous. He was shy a little bit. He was embarrassed about how he was acting. Then he was scared he was going to get in trouble. So all these emotions piling up. And they, you know, I would have felt like that. Why did I act like that? Uh-oh. Now I've wrecked my reputation. I mean, just think of the things that pile up, because that's like four different scenarios going on. He had no idea how to filter all that. So children don't know how to filter all that out of there. We'll just move on. I'm going to hurry because I want to. Gail, what time should I stop? I need a stop moment.
Eight.
Okay, good. All right. Now, another thing you can do. Well, let's talk about some of the things that can set children off, some triggers for child anxiety. And that was an example of one. So if your kid just starts acting like a wackadoodle, there could be something much bigger to look at than just their behavior. That's what I'm trying to get across with that story. Okay. And in the brain, by the way, real anxiety that is diagnosed anxiety, it has to do with the neurotransmitters of the brain not going to the receptors to the level that the receptor needs to keep things calm. And this is adults, children, whoever. It's all brains. And sometimes it takes, it's not a test. Some people, I've heard about this place on Buford Highway you can go to have your finger pricked. Don't go use your money there. You cannot find out about your serotonin and your dopamine and any of that with a finger prick. But they can sure sell it to you. So be careful. You go more with symptoms. And if it's treated and changes, then you know that that was right. But the neurotransmitters are not going into the receptacles. I just tell people all these little buckets in the brain appropriately. And when they hit a certain level of deficit, a person mood problems, much anxiety, even depression, can't sleep, all kinds of things, lots of symptoms. Okay, some common triggers for a child, and I'm going to try to just stay focused on children here. Excess stress. You say, well, what do little kids have to be stressed about? Well, apparently, sometimes going to meet a new teacher. You just never know. Maybe they're tired. And they're supposed to be acting the same way they act every. But today they didn't get as much sleep, and their little brain didn't have as much to draw from. So excess stress, and like if there's a lot of fighting in the home, mom and dad, or mom and mother-in-law, or grandma, whoever, that is horrible for children. That is so bad. I mean, if there was one thing I could beg, if I could push a button, had the power over that, I would stop that right now. Yelling and fighting and unrest in the home. It's just so bad for children. It even messes with their brainstem. It even affects the formation of their brainstem, which can give them trouble or anxiety the rest of their lives. Those first 2 years of life, especially. So we need, you know, some emotional intelligence in our homes. Children that are neglected. Who believe get the signals that they cannot count on being cared for. Children very tiny can pick that up. They can cry the distress cry and nobody comes. You know what happens to children who cry distress cries and nobody comes? They quit crying. What's the point? Now your children, you know why they kept crying when they needed something? They were the signal and you answered the signal. And you were doing a great thing for them when you did that. That's very, very important. So neglect is terrible for children, can be a stressor for anxiety. Poor diet is also a trigger for anxiety. Injury, pain is certainly a trigger for anxiety. Illness and pain, fear. Like if, let's say a child has asthma and they're scared they can't breathe, they're starting to get bad and they didn't. Like I was a little kid and I had asthma. There was no medicine back then. And I remember wondering some nights if I was going to die or not. Not many. I mean, let's don't get too dramatic here. But that did enter my mind every once in a while. And that was very anxiety-inducing. But since I lived through the night, It was fine. And they didn't know back then if you would not lay flat, because we were laying flat. It was harder to breathe than just to lean out. I figured that out on my own, though, how to sit up at night and breathe. Traumatic events, maybe an automobile accident, the loss of a loved one, just catastrophic things like surgery for little kids. These are all triggers for anxiety. Excessive discipline. You know, the Bible mentions, I guess is the word, exasperate a child. Don't exasperate a child or whatever. You know, enough's enough. It can be too much. There's other ways to bring discipline besides just the same old hard thing every time. Now, here's one a lot of people don't pay attention to, but I know you've noticed it. When a child might see something scary on TV or in a video, you know, actual a visual that scares them, that doesn't just leave them the minute that scene goes away in front of them. I have treated children for anxiety that saw something in a movie, and we work on it for a year to get that image out of their minds. It's just really something. I thought something so mean on Facebook last week. I hope none of y'all did this. I just won't look at you. So I just can't imagine this. So the mamas would be online with the teacher, acting like they were online with the teacher. Maybe some of you saw this. And they're talking. They go, "Oh, well, thank you, Miss Smith. It's going to be so great to meet you. Would you like to meet Jimmy? Jimmy, come over here. Miss Smith, your teacher's on here. Miss Smith wants to meet you." So Jimmy would come over. Well, what's on the screen? There really wasn't a person on the screen. It was a horrible picture. Maybe one eyeball is out and their hair is all over the place and their teeth are missing. And they just looked like freaks, because they were. And the child would walk over to and go and start backing up. And some of them would go, "Hello." Trying to be polite to this monster on their teacher because they've been taught to be polite. And I watched three or four children do that. And finally I thought, that is so mean. I mean, that is because the pictures got worse. I mean, it's horrible. And one little boy, I just thought he was going to barf right there. And then the thought that this was going to be his teacher, I mean, it's funny and not funny, but it was, their little faces broke my heart. I just thought, and I looked at a few comments. Every one of them said, "That's mean." And it was. So, you can also have, things can happen like that where a person has now an aversion to something. And so they only have anxiety about that one thing. I was on an airplane I was a single mom for several years, and I was on an airplane with my one-year-old, my three-year-old, and my four-year-old. And we were heading to Tupelo, Mississippi by way of Memphis to see my mom and dad. And I was on a little bitty plane, 18 seats, and no stewardesses or anything, just a pilot behind a curtain. If the curtain moved, you could see the pilot right there. It was just a little bitty plane. We got caught in a wind shear on our way to Memphis, and the plane started going down, and it's going down fast. And my 3-year-old and 4-year-old were in the two seats in front of me, and I saw one eye of each of them looking through the seat at me like, "What's going on?" And I'm holding the baby, and I thought, well, this is it. At least we're all going to go together. Well, right as we could see rooftops, on the pilot came on and said, "I'm sorry, there's nothing I can do." That was reassuring. And the curtain, we were upside down, so the curtain was on the ceiling of the airplane. And I'm watching, everything's upside down. I thought, okay, this is it. And we were moving so fast, the altitude going down so fast. And your ears are just popping, and the baby in my arms is screaming, I think, Clint, because it hurt his ears. And then right as I can see rooftops, which are still very tiny, but you're very low when you can just see that. It went swoosh, and the plane righted and took off. I didn't fly for about 15 years. I had just flying anxiety and nothing else, nothing else. Now, you weren't going to get me on another airplane. And how God got me back on one was I became a counselor, and I started leading women's seminars and so forth. And this church in Indiana hired me to come up there and do a women's seminar for a weekend. And my brother lived up there, so I planned it where I'm going to drive up to Indiana and do the seminar and spend a few days with my brother and drive home. What comes to my mailbox a week before the conference? Plane tickets. Oh, no. And I'm supposed to speak on faith. I thought, well, shoot, this ain't going to work out very well. So I thought, my husband said, "You can do it. You can do it. We'll just pray and pray. You can do this." And so I went to the Atlanta. Well, he drove me to the Atlanta airport. And right when it was time to load the plane, one of these thunder crashing, lightning slashing storms comes right at the airport. And we're on the plane and it's rocking back and forth. That's very funny. And I don't ever perspire, but sweat was rolling out of my hair. But nobody else looked tense. I thought, okay, it's going to be all right. Anyway, that's how God broke my aversion to flying. It's called exposure therapy. And it really is called that. You just expose a person to the thing that they're very, very afraid of. I do not recommend that with children unless you really know what you're doing, because it can be very mean. It can be, I was an adult and I could handle that, but it still felt kind of mean. A little boy that I worked with that was scared of garbage cans. Who know, you know, the fears of things are all, you know, there's no end to what they can be. And there was one sitting beside the couch he was sitting on in my office, and there was one behind my chair so that if I had, so I could just flip it back there. I guess people thought I threw stuff on the floor, but there was a garbage can back there. And his whole thing was he was afraid of garbage cans. How in the world he didn't notice that one 12 inches from him, I don't know. So I just said, well, now what happens? His face turned white, and I said, what happens if you get near a garbage can? So he surely wasn't even noticing that one, or he blocked it out. So I said, well, I have one over here. Can I show it to you? And he didn't answer me. So I'm doing exposure therapy with this kid, but you do it in little bitty steps, desensitization. And I picked up my garbage can, and I put it back down. I said, it's okay. I'm not going to get it out again, but I just want you to know there's one back here. And, yeah, the smart aleck in me wants to go, and by the way, right by your leg, but I didn't. He never paid any attention to that garbage can. By the end of the session, I asked his mother if we could have 2 hours. I had my garbage can in front of the desk, in front of my little stand by my chair. And then I said, every 5 minutes, I'm going to move this 3 inches closer to you. Is that okay? He would never answer my questions, but he didn't scream and say no. So I just would move it and just keep talking. We'd talk about school and other things. We didn't talk about that garbage can. And by the end of the session, I was able to put it right in front of him. I said, now tell me the bad thing that's going to happen. What bad thing is going to happen? He said, I thought it would have happened by now. I said, well, let's just sit and wait and see. And it's exposure therapy is what it is. So if there's something your child's afraid of that's just really irrational, if you can get them to at least say the word and you can get them to look at it, that's exposure therapy. And if you can move it closer to them, no, force them and move it a little closer to them and just see if the calmness, you know, have a calm environment. If not, back off. Don't do it. Now I want to talk about, let's see, where are we? Remember this, that your child does not know how to think about his anxiety. He does not know he has anxiety. He's dysregulated, if you want a word. He's dysregulated. And here are some symptoms of child anxiety. One is, and this is very adult, looping repetitive thoughts. Just looping, 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 and can't get it out of their mind. I saw an awful lot of children with thought anxiety. And then there's fears and worries that go with that. Sometimes the thing they were thinking over really wasn't that worrisome. It was just they couldn't get it out of their mind. A little girl I worked with couldn't get the guns out of her mind. She always said she wasn't scared of them, but all she thought about was guns all the time. And in school, she drew one, so she got in big trouble. And I thought, what in the world? You know, and you, of course, you questioned, did you see one somewhere? Did it scare you? Does your grandpa have one? And you saw grandpa cleaning you? I mean, I got nothing to work with. All I know is this youngin's got this gun thing in her head all the time. So we finally taught her if you get a picture of a gun, get a picture of a kangaroo instead. You know, just pop it, pick some other things to think about, diversion. And that works pretty well with children. Adults are too smart for that, but it works very well with children. So they have little fears and worries, and they're sometimes it's specific. I'm afraid that our doors are locked, but people can get in at night. I hear that one a lot. I'm scared something's going to happen to mommy while I'm at school. I cannot tell you how many times I heard that one. It was just amazing. And then I came to the conclusion, I already knew this, but with Satan, well, there's just nothing new under the sun. He's got some of the same old junk he flings at one after another. And some would come with, I'd say, oh, I know, I bet you're afraid of, because I'd heard it so many times. And that would happen. Sudden spike of fear, something that suddenly scares them. Maybe something that was ooky on somebody's front porch on Halloween that jumped out behind a bush. That might stick with them for a while. And some of them just think that's hysterical and they just go right on. We just have such different makeup. Dread. Now, dread is when, and I've had adults do a lot of this too, dread anxiety is where a person's going, what if this happens? And what if that happens? It's the what ifs. What if? What if? And people would come in my office, adults or children, and go, well, what if? And I'd go, aha, the key words and is what if. It's the top signal that a person has anxiety before they've told you they have anxiety. If they start doing what if, because they're dreaming up things that haven't happened, that aren't real, and probably won't happen, but they're stuck on the fear of what if. other people get another symptom is fixation on predetermined outcomes. I know that's not going to go right. I know they're sort of negative. I know that ain't going to work. I know my picture ain't going to be good. Little kids that draw their picture for school and they're sure it's not going to be any good, so why try? The teacher ain't going to pick mine. You know, predetermined outcomes. Insomnia is a signal sometimes. By the way, these are sometimes. These are sometimes. Okay. Increased heart rate, flutters in the chest, the breathing problems, the shortness of breath. Now, those are physical symptoms. And if it says, I can't breathe, and you can hear them doing that, it's probably not asthma, unless it came on all of a sudden and they already have asthma. It's more than likely an anxiety symptom. And if it doesn't calm down, though, you need to call your doctor. Sweating, trembling and shaking. The biggest one, the biggest physical one with children that I run into is upset stomach. Or that there's not necessarily really nauseous. They just say their tummy hurts. And that's very, very, very common. You don't hear as much headache from children, but some of them, they get a little older, they'll tell you that they have a headache. Loss of appetite, crying and whining. But there again, that's not, in conjunction with what? Because they might just do that just because they're little. Clinging, being very clingy. Acting confused. Here's one that was common. Difficulty concentrating and having a great deal of trouble making a decision. I mean, to the thing like, should I use my red pencil or my green pencil? I just don't know. What if I use the wrong one? It's like, what? There's not a wrong one. But in that type of anxiety thinking, there is. They get really, really hung up. Muscle tension, aches and pains. Some children will tell you that they hurt. Sometimes it's growing pains. But sometimes it's connected to anxiety. Fatigue, irritability, even anger. I work with a lot of people that are angry. They want me to help them with their anger. It's anxiety. They are angry, but the root is anxiety. Getting startled easily. If a child seems very on edge and they're like, what's that? What's that? Did you hear that? That's a startle response, and that's usually anxiety. And then those little hypochondriacs, their little health worries. Do you see this right here? And it's just, there's nothing. But they will show you 25 boo-boos, and 24 of them aren't real. They don't exist, but they're real focused on their physical being. And then this one's odd, but most of my clients said this, not so much the children, maybe when they got a little older, but getting anxious about getting anxious. Because anxiety is so uncomfortable that then you get a worried that's going to come back. I'm going to have that again. Now they're anxious about getting anxious. So just the big deal is pay attention if your child is dysregulated. And it's just not the norm. You might need to sit down and have a talk. So that's where we're going now, the tools. These are very important, the tools. The first big thing is to pray, but for you. Pray for them, yes. But moms, I mean, good grief, how do you do it without first thing in the morning going, okay, Jesus, here we go again. Good morning. Give me strength today. Give me patience. Give me wisdom. And did I mention patience? You know, just you really need to pray up to do what you do. We all do. But I'm telling you what, you really need to pray up as moms. I mean, one minute they're doing this, the next minute their head's bleeding because they jumped off of something. It's like, you just never know what's coming next. And then the phone rings and that they need you there. So pray, pray, pray. And of course, I want you to pray with your children. The big thing is when Reynolds came in the door and he was just so not himself, he was so out of whack and very upset. What got through was talking to him and listening to what he had to say and trying to help him understand it. Just, explain, maybe this like that. Did it feel like that? Is that what happened? Did you get scared? And he was able to say yes. But he didn't understand how to break it down when it was happening. So talk to your children. I've got something that I wanted to have you draw on your paper, but because of time, I'm not going to. But it's about that a child's thoughts will determine their feelings, and their feelings will determine their outcome. So you can put TFA on your paper if you're taking it. TFA, thoughts, feelings, actions. If your child's actions are out of whack, so are their thoughts. It always goes back to there's something they're thinking which is causing them to feel something that's not right, which is resulting in an outcome. TFA, thinking, feeling, acting. Now let's look at some more tools. One of them is I talk to children about pretending that they have a feelings box right here. And every once in a while, we don't know why, all kinds of feelings like scared and mad and confused and happy, all of them, they're all in there. And I say, now it's pretend. That's not really where your feelings are. And every once in a while, it opens up and it flies up here and it lands. And you might be mad, but you don't know why. You might be scared, but you don't know why. But that's when you go and you probably start acting like it. And mom is going to say, why are you acting like that? Because you're going to show it. Remember thinking, feeling, acting. And that's every human being that ever walked. And mom's going to say, what's the matter with you? You need to tell her. Something came out of my feelings box. If you can't think of how to tell her, and then that's her signal to sit down with you and say, hey, what's going on? And to think about it with them. So feelings box is the first tool. The next one is, I don't know if you can see these back there. I love these. I use these in my office. These are squishy faces. I would let kids hold them. But I have a whole bunch of faces with different emotional looks on them. And I had them lined up in my office. And I would say, some children just can't tell you. So we'll go pick the face that looks like it feels like you. Oh man, that was a great communicator. It was great. And these are a little bit pricey, but they online you can pick up these emotional you can look up emotional faces chart and just copy it. And it's got about 30 faces on it. And ask them, do you see how you feel on this piece of paper? And they can do that very, very well. I use that a lot in my office. This is called a fidget toy. It's really called a fidget snake, but who likes that word? So, and you can just do all kinds of things with it. It's a little bit like the Rubik's Cube, but not. I never could do a Rubik's Cube all the way unless I picked the stickers off and stuck them the way I wanted them. So this is a super calm down toy. I've had this about 15 years, and it hadn't worn out yet. It still works perfectly. My grandkids love to play with this thing. And you can get it, you can turn it into a ball even. I'm not smart enough to do that. But then straighten it. See if you can get it all wadded up and then straighten it back out. But the fidget snake, I saw those on, I looked to see if they still sell them. I got mine at Walmart. They sell them on Amazon. But they're not as long as this one. So they're smaller. Breathing exercises, these are real important for children. The deal with the kids is, or any adults too, you breathe in through your nose. You know, hold it, just, you know, like count to four, and then blow it out through the mouth real slow. In other words, you're controlling this breathing, and it's a very peaceful thing to do. It's great. Adults tell me they really like the breathing exercises, but it makes a child have to stop. And if they're real, you know, it's just like, and it helps them if you'll tell them to count, or you count with them while they're breathing and do it with them. And then you're diverted. You're now thinking about the numbers instead of whatever your mind was on that made you anxious. Another thing to do is what I call, for children, called turtle. And they get down in the floor. I'm not going to do that in a dress. They get down in the floor and just get as little as they can get. And so if I were doing it, I'd be in the floor, my head down, my arms back, and my feet up under me. I mean, they're just little kids. Like this, and they're supposed to do that breathing and stay in. It's a very relaxing position. I had one little fella fall asleep in my office doing it. I thought he either passed out or he went to sleep. He went to sleep, and I mean, it really calmed him down. And the only reason I asked him to do it, we weren't even talking about anxiety. He was not acting very nice in my office, and I could tell he was all wound up. And I said, I need you to be a turtle for me for just a second. And I showed him how to do it. He did it and fell asleep. It was very relaxing. Turtle's good. Another great one, this is for adults and children, but kids like this one. You would have them sitting in a chair, like just a chair like that, and think about tightening up their feet and ankles, just tense, but down there. Of course, your calves are going to go with it. I can't separate them. I don't know if you can. But then do one of those breathe-ins through their nose while they're squeezing their ankles and feet to tight the muscles, and then blow it out. Then release that squeeze. Now squeeze the calves. In other words, you're going to work up the whole body. You're going to go all the way up. And the last squeeze you do with the breathe is the entire body. You tense up everything. And neck, ugly face, everything. And kids get a kick out of it. But you go through it about four times. The breathing, you go through the tightening. My doctor told me, we were talking about insomnia one time, and he said, I want you to try this. He said, this came from ancient Egypt. Oh, okay, yeah. Mummify me. No, he said, just lay on your bed at night and just squeeze tight, 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 and count to 10 and breathe through and let it go. He said, do that about 6 or 7 times, and you will be very relaxed after you do that compared to how you felt before. And it's true. The releasing of those really tight muscles helps. Now, a little bitty kids, you're not going to do that well with little bitties, but you can get them to take a deep breath and blow bubbles. It's not as easy as the other breathing, but it helps children calm down. But that take a deep breath in and do a fast breath out. Blowing bubbles is great for little bitty kids. A running burst, you can say to a little kid that's anxious, here, let's do a little exercising. You say, I'm going to look at my watch, and I want you to run that way for 10 seconds. You need to go outside probably. And then I'm going to yell, turn, and come back. And these are running bursts, and it gets their heart rate up, and have them just keep doing that. And when the heart rate gets up and they're breathing hard, it calms them down. Sometimes you just need a reset. You know, just a good old little reset. A frozen washcloth, wet a washcloth, wad it up into a mess, put it in your freezer, put a rubber band around it so it'll stay in that mess. Let it freeze in the freezer. When they seem pretty anxious or even kind of disobeying a lot, go get that washcloth, and I want you to hold it. Froze, that's cold, and it kind of shocks them into a little different, it changes them. And now tell them to try to unwad it and peel it and get it flat. That's another exercise. It's a diversion, but the frozen works on the hands, and it calms them down. At home, I think you should have a calm spot for your children. Now, there's the good old go to your room. Well, yeah, but in their room, do they have a little nook or something, maybe a beanbag chair or their own little fluffy chair with a special blanket that's just for that chair, some of their favorite books, maybe a little bitty whiteboard to draw on if they're old enough for that, maybe something that plays music. It's their calm down spot. See, the point is to teach them to recognize that they're out of whack, so to speak, and that they need to go to their calm spot to pull it back together. It's called self-regulation. So you're not always in it. Go to your room and regulate yourself. We don't say that, but it's like, or maybe we're saying, would you get out of my face, please? You really don't. And you, when you get my age and you have adult children and all these precious grandchildren, you think, did I ever say get out of my face? I hope I didn't say that. You know, now the thought of that is just horrifying. And I can't actually remember ever saying that, but I bet I did. And it's just it's a yucky feeling. So I hope I said, oh, sweetie, what's the matter? And, of course, you know, I doubt that a single mother with three little kids said that very much. But that they really do need that much tenderness to figure out what's going on with themselves. Otherwise, they think that when they have an emotion that it's bad. Because I was raised with go to your room. If you were angry or upset, there was no talking. It was just, we don't do that here. Go in your room till you straighten up. Well, I learned that emotion was bad. You're not allowed to have those. Well, yes, the heck you are. And then God shook me into the counselor world to get all that figured out, I guess. Something I love for children, I call them joy books. They make their own. They go, Mama, get them a little spiral set of 3x5 cards or little 4x6 cards. And unlike one, don't tear them out of the spiral. Leave them in there. It's for their own little book. And they are to maybe give them magazines that you don't mind them tearing pictures out of or cutting pictures out of if they're old enough, and a glue stick. And putting in pictures of things that make them happy, that are happy or pretty or they think are cute. If they're old enough to write Bible verses, have them write Bible verses in their joy book. Have them write a prayer. Or if they can't, look it up and read it. And they tell you, I like that verse, what that says. You write it. You write their words. You let them doodle in the book. They can draw in the book. But they keep this. This is their joy book. I have kids that I did this with 15 years ago. They're in college, or now they're married and have their own kids, and they tell me they still have their joy books. They look at them themselves still, or they let their children look at them. Another fun one. You'll have to use your imagination some on this one. I loved for kids to come back to my office the next week with a tool belt on. And I don't mean go to Home Depot and buy them a tool belt. I mean, you had to rig it, like use one of Daddy's old belts and cut it down and make it fit them. And it was to figure out things you can use around the house as tools to represent calming down. For instance, one little girl, this was my favorite, she came back in. She had made, very innovative, her mom and her too. She had an old remote control so she could change her mind. She had a little pack of Kleenex on her. She had a little cup with a lid on it that had rocks. So she could, I gave children rocks all my years of counseling as Jesus is the rock. They got to pick a rock out of the bowl every time they came to my office. She had saved all her rocks, and she would stick her hand in her rocks when she got nervous. And remember, Jesus was the rock. Her tools were so cute. Her joy book was strapped onto her belt. She had a water bottle in case she got dehydrated, she told me. And it was just so cute. What little did she know that one of the tools for children with anxiety is to drink more water. Dehydration, anxiety is one of the dehydration signals in children. So, but anyway, that little tool belt. And it was so much fun. I mean, they just got the biggest kick out of that. And they actually used it. And I said, now I don't recommend you wear that to school, okay? Because, you know. But some of them wanted to, but they used it at home. The alphabet game. This is another diversion. A lot of these are diversions. Ask a child, if you were the letter A which stands for apple, or they can think of a word. What would you be doing right now? Or where would you be right now if you were an apple? And so you do that one. Okay, if you were a bee, the letter B, if that was butterfly, where would you be right now? And go through, it's a total diversion thing to get their mind off of whatever's going on. I love magazines for kids to cut out pictures. A magazine picture, I believe, saved a kid's life in my office. Quick story, but he had tremendous anxiety. That's what his mother brought him for. He would not talk to me hardly. He was 8 or 9 years old, not much of a talker, and he didn't like being there, and he was scared and lots of things. And so finally I pulled out the magazines. I said, you know what, you don't have to talk to me. I tell you what, let's do this together. Let's pick out pictures of, let's tear out pictures of things that we like. And I did my pile while he's doing his. I'm into doing it with the kids. And then I said, now pick, if you see any pictures of things that kind of bother you, you're scared of, tear those out. Well, on that one, or a picture that shows the way you feel about something, that's where I wanted to get to. Well, he tore out a picture of a volcano that with lava was running down. And I said, finally, though, he would talk about these pictures. He had about 10 pictures. We had glued them on the poster board. And tell me about this volcano. Why'd you tear that out? He said, that's how mad I get. Oh, we're getting somewhere now. And then he found in a probably Southern Living or somewhere on the wall in somebody's house was a giant safety pin for art. He tore that out and he stuck it right by the volcano. And I said, now that's it. You know what that is? He said, yes, it makes you stuck. I said, okay, why'd you cut that out? And he said, that's how I feel when my brother holds me underwater. Oh my gosh. How often does that happen? Every day. My mom makes him take me to the pool and he drowns me. Every day. He told his mother and she went, that's ridiculous. Well, guess what? That brother was sitting out in my waiting room and I said, is that the one? Yeah. Okay, you go out there. I want to talk to him. And I this isn't necessarily fair and square, but I said to him, so I understand you get a big kick out of holding your brother underwater. And he laughed. That's so funny. I said, if you ever do that again, I'm having you arrested. Well, I took care of it. He never did it again. But I told him more than that. But that's child abuse, child-on-child abuse. And he was petrifying that child. And that little fellow was now staying awake all night long, being scared the next day he was going to have to go to the pool with his brother. And big brother, was his friends were there laughing and would say, hold him 5 more seconds. Hold him under 5 more. Let's see how long we can hold him. Oh, my gosh. But that safety pin and that picture and the volcano. That child would not talk, but it was pictures that did it. And so I fell in love with using magazine pictures for tools. I have several more tools, but I just don't want to. I don't want to run us over. The last thing I'm going to say is medication. If nothing that you're doing is working, and your child's just something's not right, and you're getting really worried about them, and they're miserable, and their quality of life is just not there. If they're not a joyful child, I mean, children should be happy and have a lot of energy and feel confident and be able to laugh and to cry and to this and to that and be able to stay within the homeostasis, the norm, without going too high or too low. If you observe and if you have anxiety or daddy does, you know, it's in the family and now you're getting worried, maybe they have it too. Goodness gracious, go to the doctor. That doesn't mean they're going to cram something down their throat, but it might mean they might. Last week, got a call from a lady that I know well, and she took her 7-year-old. I said, I think you ought to go on and take her to the doctor. They put her on 2 milligrams of Prozac. Not, it was 2 weeks ago, actually. And this week, it worked. She said, Robbie, she's a different child. She slept all night. She didn't cry any yesterday, and she sang. She was singing in her bedroom. That child hasn't sung in months. She was just so stressed. And they have a tremendous amount of anxiety in their genetic line, and she's got it too. So some of you may have just gone, I can't believe you just said Prozac in a child. Well, here's the way I look at it. Would you give them, if they were diabetic, would you give them insulin? Yeah, well. Would you rather them be miserable and be scared of everything and not be able to play with others and develop, have no skills to self-regulate, or give them quality of life? And I'm just real big on, if necessary, and if it's the answer, and if it helps, I'm all about it. I really am. I'm not against. I love natural supplements, if we can do that first, natural things. So try those. But if they don't work, something will probably work. So I highly recommend that. For time, I'm just going to cut it off. So your goal is to teach your child how to calm themselves, to recognize how they feel. You're going to have to teach it to them and teach it to them and teach it to them until they finally start to self-regulate. And it does work. It really does work. there's a lot more. I have a book back there that I wrote about. It's a book of just pictures that I drew on my whiteboard in counseling, and then the explanation is on one page in the picture. There's a lot about anxiety in there, a lot of parenting tools in there. If y'all are interested, they're on the back table. I guess I'm supposed to say, do you have any questions? Anybody want to ask any questions? Yes, ma'am.
Wait,
I forgot. The microphone.
Thank you so much for all that you shared. There was so much good stuff there.
Thank you.
One of my kids has diagnosed anxiety.
Okay.
He is very well behaved at school, but at home it is, I think the best word I can use is relentless.
Wow.
Defiant.
Mm-hmm.
Is that often a sign of anxiety as well? Is it his need for control? And if so, is there anything in a nutshell you can say for how we as parents navigate that?
Well, first of all, it's very interesting that he controls, I'm going to use the word controls himself in school and doesn't control himself at home. That tells me something besides anxiety. Because you have true anxiety, it's very difficult to control, especially in a child. How old is this child?
9.
Okay. Yeah, he's needing some other adjustments. But, in fact, it wouldn't hurt to talk. Have you talked to your pediatrician about anxiety?
I have not.
Okay. That would be my first thing. Or go see a counselor. Mm-hmm. Take him to a counselor and let's talk it out. But I have another suspicion about him with behaving this way at home and behaving this way not at home. Yeah, and that's not uncommon, by the way. One thing is they do know that you'll always love them, no matter how they act, and your safety zone. And, that's as far as I'll go with that. Okay. But that can be changed.
Okay.
That can be changed. That book back there would help you with that a great deal.
Okay, good.
Okay.
Thank you.
Anybody else? Yes, ma'am. Oh, I'm sorry. I keep forgetting that microphone.
Okay, so my question is, if it's a traumatic event,
mm-hmm.
I guess if you have multiple traumatic events
mm-hmm.
have happened, so I'll just give you background. My son is 4 and a half, and in the last year, he has had a near-fatal drowning where he was unconscious and blue and resuscitated, and 2 major surgeries from hearing, and then the ENT has also told me that he's had a bit of sensory trauma because he couldn't hear,
mm-hmm.
and the world was a bit too crazy for him.
Right.
And then Corona.
Oh, wow.
So,
okay.
He's actually pretty happy.
Mm-hmm.
He's doing pretty well, but
mm-hmm.
we do see stuff.
Okay.
So I guess my question is, is it necessary for us to find which traumatic event started it? Because
mm-hmm.
that's where we struggle is.
Okay.
We're not sure if, is this because of the drowning? Is this because of Corona? Is this
I hear you. The whole pile, you know? Yeah.
Everything and
well, as far as how important is it to find the event, this is just my opinion. It's more important right now to work with him every time you notice an anxiousness. What are you thinking? You know, the talking. What's going on? What are you thinking about? Now, is he doing anxious behaviors or?
His biggest 2 would be, and this has actually died down a little bit. He had a verbal tic.
Okay.
Where he would just say, no monsters, no monsters, no monsters.
Oh, okay.
And then,
okay.
Which was completely, he barely watches any scary, like, I don't know if he's really seen a monster.
Right, right.
And then his other one is just clinginess.
Okay.
Very like, I don't want to be alone. I don't
mm-hmm.
want to be alone.
I would do this for a time and see how it works out. Use some of these soothing, distracting, just diversions, and we're talking to him and help him make a joy book and all these things, and see if any of these things, and be very consistent. See if anything, all the things added together, make any difference in his ability to think things through, and rather than just the tic. I've worked with children with tics, and they don't, at some point, they do it some, they don't even know they're doing it. It just becomes a part, and you hope that doesn't develop. And I assume you're working with a doctor on that. You've talked to a pediatrician about that.
Yes. It's harder in COVID times because
that's true.
You can't see people in person.
That's true.
So we've been wanting to help him. But
when he's doing that, can you divert him and say, let's sing this song, and then will that stop it while you sing?
Yeah. Okay. But he'll still insert it into sentences.
Okay.
Like mid-sentence.
And does he catch it? Is he aware of it?
Yeah. I'll ask him.
Okay.
And just say, you know, are you afraid right now?
Mm-hmm.
I have said that. What are you thinking? And mm-hmm. he said, I'm just reminding myself not to be scared.
Okay. And then
aren't real.
Okay. And one thing, the children that tell me they're scared that there's somebody under their bed at night, I go, now how many times has that happened? Logic. How many times has that, and I'll go to the board and I'll make a chart for you. We're going to write down all the times. And they don't, and so I go, okay, I'm ready. How many times have you seen a monster?
Yeah.
Well, none. I go, zero. How many times, listen. So how likely, we just use logic.
Yeah.
But anyway, do some of these, if he seems tense and so forth, use some of these tools. If it doesn't make a big difference, you do need to talk to the doctor about that.
Yeah. Well, and then that segues into my next question. He did do a little bit of counseling right after the drowning and the first surgery. And she just kept saying, I don't really see any anxiety in him. And we were just like,
how could he not have anxiety?
If you don't see it, that's fine. But he just had a traumatic event. Please.
Yeah, you know the deal. She or he is seeing this child for 1 hour, an hour that he's not particularly upset about it. But yes, that's very traumatic.
Yeah.
It may not show her, but just whether he's showing trauma at that moment, you still work with that.
Right. So after six sessions, so I guess my question is, how can we find someone that's good? Because I felt like I was just Googling randomly, like Christian child
that's
counselor.
That's hard. That's really, really hard.
I had no idea where to start.
I'm going to give you my phone number after this and let's talk and I'm going to find you somebody.
Okay.
Yeah, that's need the right spot for that. I have somebody in mind, but I'm not sure. Anybody else? Okay. Awesome. Y'all were great. Thank you so much.